Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host for Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear. Today on our show, we have Senator Jennifer McClellan, Senator Rosalind Dance, Delegate Dolores McQuinn, and Mary Jo Sheely, candidate for House of Delegates in House District 68. Thanks so much for joining us today, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
And looking at some of the issues that are bringing women into politics, and not only is running and being present, but the surge of groups out there of women supporting candidates and doing that grassroots organizing for you. What do you want to say about that emergence in politics and what's driving that?
I think we as women that are elected official, we're finding out that there are issues that are germane to us, and we are finally at the seat of government where we can be a voice and advocate for those who are not there. And they are realizing the importance that we play, as evidenced by just in the recent years, the types of attacks that have been made directly on women. And normally it's men that bring the policies, address the policies, and to make the decisions. In these cases, we, women, have been at the table and strong advocates, voices for the reality of what they're trying to do to us, and have been able to influence enough of our colleagues to stop. And whatever we couldn't, we had a governor who believed in strong women because he has a strong woman partner that says enough is enough.
Yeah, I think also November 8th was a wake-up call for a lot of people. We thought that the glass ceiling was going to finally be shattered. We would elect the first woman president, and we didn't. We still made a lot of history that November. We elected four new women senators to the U.S. Senate, three of them of color. But we saw there was still a lot of misogyny, a lot of sexism through the campaign last year. And for a lot of people, they took the energy of, you know, a lot of people were frankly in mourning, and they took that negative energy and turned it into something positive. And I saw that firsthand. You know, I was going to announce my candidacy for the state Senate on November 9th and clearly was not in a position to do that, but started to get texts from people saying, like, we need something to focus on. When are you going to announce? And I think we all know the Pantsuit Nation websites, the one here in the Richmond area, started on that Wednesday. By Sunday, had 12,000 people. They had their first meetup over in Bird Park, and it was a lot of people who had never been involved in politics beyond voting, who now were ready to get involved and said, you know what, I can't just sit back and assume that if I vote and do nothing else, that's enough. And now a lot of those people, you know, so a lot of them, my race was the first election after that. So a lot of them came out and did calls, knocked on doors, who had never done it before. And now some of them who for the first time ever got involved in politics in that special are now running. So I think for boomers who lived through the 60s, I think November 8th came as no surprise because they were like, we've seen this before, we've been here before. I think for a lot of Gen X and millennials, it was a wake-up call. And that is what got them involved. And I think they're going to stay involved.
But I think also that for so long, we were that voiceless minority. You didn't have, you know, someone was always sitting at the table representing us and speaking for us. And I think, as Jen has said, in terms of certainly November the 8th, you know, the wake-up call really gave women, I think, even greater backbone and spine to step up to the plate and decide that, you know what, the issues that are at hand are those things that affect me and my daughter and my sister and nieces. And you know what, I ought to have the voice. I ought to be very vocal about those particular issues. And I think that was something that also, I guess, forced women to step up. You know, with Hillary running for the second time, I think it also gave us a sense of expectation that, you know, we were ready as a nation. You know, we were ready to put someone in. And I mean, even with women running and supporting one another, there was a wake-up call there as well when we looked at, you know, who were those individuals that supported her, you know. And so I think that even though we have come a long way, there's still a distance that we have got to go in terms of just supporting one another. I guess one of the most disappointing things for me was the fact that so many women voted for Donald Trump rather than Hillary Clinton. And when you looked at, you know, all of those who were running and the bios, the experience, who was more qualified than her to be the president of this nation? So I think that we are, you know, there are, I guess, liberal women who say that, you know, we are ready to move on. But I think that there's still a lot more discussion that we need to have as to how do we be supportive of one another. And sometimes it's not just for Democrats. It may be for Republican women based on the issues. Joining the forces, coming together and finding those commonalities that help us to support one another and, again, be the shoulders, be the arms for one another, the backbone.
I'm one of those women that was running for the first time. Mm-hmm. I retired a year ago, and I volunteered on the Hillary campaign and, you know, met some great people. And we were also very excited and also very disappointed. And Jen, listening to you, I realized that probably the first thing that I did, I knew I couldn't turn away. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I came down to your office at your headquarters and met you, and I made phone calls for you. And I still didn't know what I was going to do. I went to the Women's March. I had huddles in my house, and I went to the General Assembly when Planned Parenthood's bill was being brought up mm-hmm. by the Republicans to try to defund it. And
if you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM. I'm your host, Carol Olson. Today on the show, I have State Senator Jennifer McClellan, State Senator Rosalind Dance, Delegate Dolores McQuinn, and Mary Jo Sheely, candidate for House of Delegates in House District 68. Now back to our show.
That was the turning point for me when I looked up there. I'm a lawyer also. And I looked up there and I saw the first subcommittee I went to, there's five men up there, four of them old white men who are Republicans, and they didn't care. They weren't listening. They just wanted to hurry up so they could get on to the next, you know, the next item. And women were telling gut-wrenching stories, and they weren't paying attention, and it really made me mad. And I looked at them and I said, you know, I can do better than that. And there's nothing magic about what they're doing, and there is no magic in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And we all can do better by women also, because there is this energy out there that we've all been talking about since Trump, meetings and everything, and getting that harnessed and moved on. Because, you know, what I tell people when they ask me, I said, you march, you protest, you write letters, you make phone calls, and then you find a candidate and you support them and you get them elected. And we've got a lot of opportunities, a lot of people running, including women, and that's what people need to be doing out there because there's a lot to be done.
Some positive takeaways from that election. We didn't break the glass ceiling as far as get our first female president, but when the numbers are counted, there were 3 million plus more that voted for Hillary Clinton than voted for our current president. That's a statement. So it was also learning the process as far as electoral college and what that means to us. And in those states where they didn't get it quite white, I think they've learned tremendously from that. But the numbers speak, 3 million plus more voted for that female candidate. And if it was just by popular vote, she would be our president. Yeah. But we're seeing the changes right here in Virginia. When you look at my seat in the Senate, I replaced a male. When you look at Senator Jennifer McClellan's seat, she replaced a male. On the opposite side of the room, on our Republican side of the room, they had only one female, and now they have three. Mm-hmm. So they have more women now serving in the state Senate than ever before. So we are making, incrementally, we are making a difference. We are being heard. We are serving on as chairs of commissions, powerful commissions that are setting policy for the state of Virginia. So people should look to Virginia as far as change, because we are quietly making quite a difference in our advocacy for not just women issues, but all issues, that we can stand with the guys. We can address economic development. We can address the environment. We can address all the aspects that make up the quality of life for us as Virginians. And we're proving that we can hold our own.
And I think we are, I think certainly on the, with the Democrats, I think we are, we have been advancing a lot more progressive anyway, as it relates to, I guess, issues, as it relates to women being involved over the years. And we still overwhelmingly, there's overwhelming number of males. But however, I think that we have made a lot of progress, you know, in moving forward to make certain that women are involved, engaged, and at the table.
And I would say we've done an excellent job in the Richmond region. You know, Dolores also replaced a man. Betsy Carr in the House replaced a man. Now the Richmond delegation, just the city delegation, is a majority women.
Women, yeah.
The city council is majority women and has been for a while. And mm-hmm. we've had good success electing women to the school board. So here we're doing pretty well. In Hampton Roads, they're doing pretty well electing women. I think where we struggle a little bit is the suburbs in Northern Virginia, and definitely statewide. But we have made a lot of progress that we should be proud of.
Mm-hmm. I know when I'm out knocking doors, meeting people, going to events, meeting some incredible women, not just people who are running, not just women who are running, but incredible women behind women, helping them. Mm-hmm. Strong, passionate, really together women who got their eye on the prize about what we need to do and in supporting other women. And like you were saying, that all these issues are women's issues. All the issues are women's issues. Economic issues are women's issues. Go across the board. They're issues we all understand because we deal with them every day mm-hmm. in our families, in our lives, in our businesses. So, you know, we're really very well equipped to handle these issues.
And you're a fast learner if you're not equipped, because they're right there at the table, you know, right in front of us, having to deal with them daily, you know. So many things that affect us. And, you know, the thing about it is I actually am an ordained Baptist preacher. And so Sunday I had an opportunity to preach, and I talked about how women, the reality is that we are the birther of civilization. And so the bottom line is that everything affects us, everything, you know, but just because we are women.
One of the other factors in this election was uncovering of hidden racism mm-hmm. throughout politics in our community. And I think a lot of people thought, well, we're done with that now because we have a Black president. And many comments have been made about the candidate who's now president basically running on a racist campaign and winning. And how does that affect your progress through politics and what we're trying to do now? Was it surprising? Does it help that conversation that's been kind of got suppressed in our country for so long is an open conversation again? What are your thoughts about that?
I saw it as a dirty little secret that has now been exposed. I saw it as people that had been hiding under, like slugs under a brick or whatever, saw that there was someone out there in a national profile that was willing to say, it's okay to be as bad as you want to be. I can make that acceptable. But again, I take courage in the fact that if it was by popular vote, there were still 3 million plus that voted. There were a lot of people that didn't vote for anybody. But of those who did, the populace said that this is not the right way to go. It was all into the process, because we have processes and people are finding that out. That's why we say swing states, this state is one, the bellwether state or whatever, because a small population can really trigger the outcome, as was represented here. 3 million plus votes, you'd say, how did this happen? But again, it's the process. And it was put in place for a reason to protect, you know, to protect America from situations like this.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. I'm your host, Carol Olson. Today on the show, I have State Senator Jennifer McClellan, State Senator Rosalind Dance, Delegate Dolores McQuinn, and Mary Jo Sheely, candidate for House of Delegates in House District 68. Now back to our show.
But this is one of those life-experiencing things that we never wish to repeat. And I am very, very cautiously optimistic that as the elections come, even the one in November, is going to reflect that we are saying, no, enough is enough.
I know from my perspective, being a white woman, I get out, and when I talk to folks, white folks, you know, I get some people, like especially when I was getting signatures, so I was across the spectrum. And they was like, oh, you don't believe in that white privilege thing. Or, you know, there'd be these comments. And there were some people who said, oh, President Obama made it worse, made the division worse. And I think a lot, it's infuriating because it was like for some white folks, it shook their little world. And they didn't want to hear about the rest of that world. And you know, at times I want to scream. It's like, no, you don't understand. It's just like the frustration. We're tired. I'm not African American, but I know the community is tired of struggling with the right word, putting up with the awful stuff being put up with. And because of that, that seemed like, oh, no. That's raising somehow discourse. So put it back in the box. And we need this, just like we I hate to think about it. Maybe we needed Hillary Clinton to lose. So a lot of people woke up because a lot of people, like Jen, you were saying, all they ever did was vote. And my perfect example I go back to is abortion rights. We all have the right, but they've been chipping away at it for so long. But we're like, but we still can. And now we're at this point that we're really threatened with many issues, and it's no, we can't let this happen. This awakening of people must not stop. It's not a 2-year cycle, a 4-year cycle. We got to teach our kids, and it's got to be something that we all engage in, not just communities that have been threatened more than other communities.
I think that the election, really, when it came to race, there was clearly a wake-up call. I think we thought we all had to face some realities. And Mary Jo, you said something about, you know, the sort of the sentiment among some that Obama made it worse. No, his election, the fact that he was elected as the president, it wasn't his action, it wasn't what he did, but just the fact that the African-American male was elected in this country caused some of those things that we thought were maybe just well, we knew they exist,
right?
But we knew they exist, but they were lying dormant. Mm-hmm. And now here this individual is elected, the first African-American president. And so now some of the worst of what we thought was hidden, the worst of what we thought had been eradicated, now rose to the top. And I think that's what happened when it came to his election. We had to face that reality, but I think we also realized that there's still so much work to do in terms of race relationship. And 45 made it even more difficult. And I listened to him as he was running and all of these, you know, buzzwords and certain things that were said that you knew that they were talking about African-American, the African-American community, you know, just certain things that were constantly being said. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe he's just talking that. Maybe that's what he's just saying. But the most difficult thing for me to see is that he began to implement wherever his thoughts were, like bringing in session, which we know had a background and a history, you know, of racist statements and attitude. And so now he comes. And so, you know, what was turned around in terms of criminal justice system, we are finding ourselves having to deal with that once again with, you know, putting people, incarcerating them and throwing the key away and various other persons that he brought aboard. You know, so it is one thing to say something, but we see it
becoming live and him functioning as the president of the United States. He's implementing those thoughts that he had. And so that's going to be difficult for all of us because it's going to set us back years.
Yeah, I would reiterate that for many people of color, this was not a surprise, particularly anyone who lived through or had relatives who lived through Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Quick story. Back when Governor McDonald was governor, and the governors always have the Black Caucus come over for dinner. He had us over. It was, you know, one of the first dinners, and I was sitting next to him. And, you know, first of all, we walked in, and Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee, gigantic portraits were on the wall. I thought, okay, all right. And I sat next to him, and he said, how do you think we've done with race relations in Virginia?
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. I'm your host, Carol Olson. Today in the show, I have State Senator Jennifer McClellan, State Senator Rosalind Dance, Delegate Dolores McQuinn, and Mary Jo Sheely, candidate for House of Delegates in House District 68. Now back to our show.
And at the time, my answer was, I mean, obviously we've come a long way, but the biggest threat is ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of people who didn't live through Jim Crow, who don't understand mm-hmm. that when you may change the law, but it doesn't change the impact of the law. He said, well, give me an example. Well, we had just debated on the House floor the first voter ID bill that Virginia had that would have required a government-issued photo ID.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave that an example. And he said, well, why is that bad? Shouldn't we stop voter fraud? I'm like, well, set aside the fact there's no evidence of a rash of people voting to claim to be somebody they're not. Let's just set that argument aside. To get a government-issued photo ID, you need a birth certificate. There are people in Virginia born as late as 1940 who don't have one. He's like, well, I didn't know that. Why not? It's like, well, because in 1925, there was the Racial Integrity Act, and the guy who implemented it was a white supremacist, and he had a form that said white or colored. And if you didn't check that box, if you didn't check colored, he thought you were colored, he didn't give you one. I had no idea. Well, of course not. You're a middle-aged white man who grew up in Fairfax. You had no reason to know that. But everyone who was impacted knew it. One of the things we haven't talked about that was a huge factor in the election, particularly in the swing states, is how many voter ID laws mm-hmm. and other voter suppression laws
yes.
across the country that were passed and suppressed
mm-hmm.
the vote of people of color and the elderly. We have to talk about that, because now what disturbs me is this debate in the Democratic Party. Do we have to choose between communities of color and white rural America? No, we don't have to choose. But we do have to make sure that both get to vote.
Yeah.
I came of age sort of in the 80s, where racism was very much still alive, but only really reared its head in spurts. Whether it was, you know, the Rodney King beating or something like that. But I think for a lot of young people today who came of age under President Obama, they truly believed we were beyond all of that
mm-hmm.
because they didn't see it on a day-to-day basis unless they read certain Twitter feeds or watched Fox News and heard the buzzwords that Dolores talked about. And I think for them, there has been awakening of We still have a really long way to go, where before they didn't believe that. I mean, my niece and nephew are you know, high school and college, and for them that was the biggest wake up call. Is yes, they knew their dad had been stopped for driving black, theoretically, but other than that, they never saw racism until now.
What Jen just mentioned is something that I think take to heart, and I'm thinking about our colleague in the Hampton Roads area, Delegate Juwan Ward, who said that she was in a position to be able to advocate and be a voice, but realized she had a young black man in her family, and that they needed to know and to how you must drive as a black young man
right.
and not be arrested
right.
by the police. And not put yourself in a position to be killed just because you are driving while black. So that's a real serious thing. I have teenagers in Southern California, and my daughter and I talked about they live in this world where the majority of the people they go to school with are of you Americans, and they see that as a norm. And had to now teach them that that is not so. And they not only are they in where they live in a protected environment, they love, love, love coming to Virginia. And now that they're teenagers who will probably be having driver's license, that's something that we have to be concerned about and we have to share with them then. So we've started the dialogue. Never thought we'd have to, but with all we're seeing is happening around the country, no one is safe. Everybody is in the same box. But I also think about this when we say role models. There's a song that comes to mind of How You Like Me Now. When we talked about our president, it's not just a president. It was a president. It was a first lady. It was the children. And that was a family that was a role model of today that that will be a tough act for anyone to come behind and follow. And you know what? That's the standard that we're all looking at, not just Democrats, but Americans are looking at that family as this is what we had. This is what we have now. And they're not satisfied. And it's not a party thing. Because again, this is that this might not be broadly spoken out, but we are seeing this from, you say, women. We're seeing this from Republican women that are realizing this is just not a good deal. And they cannot, as they've had vocally spoken in support of their leader, they're trying to get away from the mics because they don't want to talk, because this is not a good time for us as Americans to have the role models that we had. When they said there was the President Obama and he started this, I assure you, be they African-American, Euro-American, or whatever, they now see the difference.
Right.
That we had that American family that just happened to be African-American, but that was the ideal American family. And do we have that now? What is the comparisons when the world sees us on the big stage?
You've been listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. We're going to continue our conversation with Senator McClellan, Senator Dance, Delegate McQuinn, and Candidate Shealy as we talk about the future of politics in Virginia. Tune in next week, Thursday at noon. To hear this show or past shows, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog. To support independent radio, to learn, volunteer, or donate, please go to WRIR.org.